It's time for Cash Flow Podcasting. Join your host, Ben Kruger, to crack open the secrets to generating massive influence, income, and freedom through the power of Cash Flow Podcasting. Here we go.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, podcasters, authorities, leaders, and individuals out there, I'm excited for our chat today because today's conversation is going to hone in on an area that very often in leadership and in online business gets, you see all kinds of differing opinions and approaches. And our guest today is somebody who has really strongly made a move and a really cognitive, conscious move to, instead of growing a very large, broad audience, they've really made a conscious effort to specify very specifically exactly who their audience is and hone in on those individuals. And as a result of doing so, they've had some significant results in the growth of their audience and significant results in connecting with that audience at a much deeper level. So I'm going to have him share a little bit more about that, which I'm really excited. So I'm going to introduce Dan Fajella. He is the founder of Tech Emergence and the podcast. It's called AI in Industry, the AI in Industry podcast. And so I'm going to have Dan tell us a little bit more about how all this got started, how they decided that they wanted to niche down and get very specific with their audience and what that has done for them. So Dan, welcome to the show.
Ben, I am glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, and this is a fun conversation that I've been looking forward to having. We had a little riff, you know, before we hit the record button because we're both really into tech and AI and a lot of the implications thereof. And obviously, this is a core central part of what you do as a business and what you are building. And today, what I want to hone in on is a little process that you've been going through for the last couple of months that has made a significant difference in the overall business, in the audience that you guys have been building, and quite honestly, lays the foundation for the entire future of the company that you are building. So I want to touch a little bit on how did you, at the very beginning with Tech Emergence, this is a new company. And of course, I imagine you'll kind of give people a little explanation as we go here. How did you decide on who was that very first audience that you were starting to build? Give us an idea of how you figured out, who are these people that I'm trying to gather into an audience?
Definitely. Yeah. So I'll talk about what we tried for off the bat and then sort of how we whittled our way down to what feels like a good fit and what has resulted in substantial growth. Initially, this is 3-4 years ago, Ben, my own personal interest is really in sort of how the future of technology is going to influence kind of what the human condition is. This is kind of artificial intelligence and neurotechnology, how we're going to augment ourselves and how we're going to build things beyond ourselves and how consequential that is. And so the initial audience for me was, hey, folks who are interested in that intersection of technology and intelligence. At the time, Ben, this is well before you had your Elon Musks and your Bill Gates is talking about AI and your Zuckerbergs and Musks talking about neural interfaces. This is back before Nick Bostrom published Superintelligence. So, there were very few of us reading Nick Bostrom on a regular basis back in these old days. And so, my initial instinct was, hey, I think this is of the grandest moral consequence. We should talk to philosophers, technology folks, researchers in the domains of AI and neuroscience and really figure out kind of the directions and ethical considerations of this transition. And as it turns out, it was so broad that it was tough to kind of figure out exactly who that niche audience is. And also, that niche audience is sort of so fledgling that maybe it's like hyper nominal. In other words, like very, very few people who want to riff on like the metaphysics of, neuroscience, for example, and sort of posit what that implies for, building a conscious agent in AI or something. Some of it was a very far out and niche group. And so we began.
Yeah, super leading edge.
Yeah, leading edge and also, but at the same time, and leading edge could sound like I'm flattering myself. I'm not intending to do that. I think I think these topics will be of a much grander, just as right now we probably have 10 times or maybe 20, maybe even 100 times more people are interested in the intersection of tech and intelligence now than they were 4.5, 5 years ago. But it's still not a gargantuan number of people. I think these will become more and more important. But back then, certainly, it was like massively nominal, just hyper nominal. No Elon Musk, nobody to proliferate this on a grand scale other than people that, you know, folks on the street do not know about. Folks in Silicon Valley, even at the time, for the most part, didn't know about. So and it also was very, so in addition to leading edge, like you said, it was also very broad. You know, the intersection of tech and intelligence could be philosophy, it could be research, it could be AI, it could be neuro. So it's sort of, it becomes something where I think we made it difficult for people to predict what's the next episode going to be about. Is it going to resonate? Maybe they listened to the last one because they love neuroscience, but the next three are about philosophy and artificial intelligence. We weren't finding a tremendous amount of traction of kind of stick there. And so we decided that it was really, you know, necessary for us to kind of refine our message. And luckily some things happened that sort of made some of that direction clear. If you want, I guess we can go into that transition of refinement.
Yeah. And one thing that I would like to point out for the listeners out here is, you know, when they started out, you really just picked a audience that you could go after with the best information that you had at the time. And you started creating the content that you felt was kind of, number one, what you were really keenly interested in and kind of surrounded the topic area that you were going after. But number two, as with any audience, it gets refined and defined over time, whether that, you know, changes to a broader audience, to a more narrow audience. And you guys have chosen specifically to, you started out broader or more broad and then chose specifically to narrow down. So let's talk about a little bit about that process and what led to the concrete realization that, hey, we got to get more specific here.
Yeah. So the big changes for us, there were kind of a number of different factors going on at once. First, when I booted this thing off, there was essentially no sort of general media site covering kind of emerging / transhuman tech in a robust fashion, really interviewing, you know, folks and trying to go deep on topics that mattered. But as time went along, there became more, it became a very saturated space, kind of like the whiz bang emerging tech, you know. And it also became mixed in with a lot of things that I don't have as much personal interest in. You know, things around 3D printing and around space travel. I have a tremendous respect for 3D printing and space travel. I have a tremendous respect for all kinds of neat technology. But for me, really, my core interest is in sort of where does that intersect with consciousness and intelligence itself, with sort of the only morally valuable substrate that we know of, which is sort of like self-aware stuff. Sort of emerging tech for the broad populace became kind of a smorgasbord of various media sites. And at the same time, as I started thinking about how I'd influence, you know, what I'm most interested in, which is kind of the global conversation around, you know, what we're building as a species here in terms of, you know, intelligences at or beyond our level, I started contemplating kind of who I really, you know, who really needs to be influenced, who's going to have a reason to tune in. And it became evident that business and government leaders might be sort of a more appropriate audience for us to speak directly to if we were going to go deep. It's possible that sort of the nuances of what's around the corner in AI are going to be mission critical for someone who runs a business that's going to need to adopt that technology, and less mission critical for someone interested in sci-fi or interested in transhumanism kind of lightly, if you understand where I'm going. So we wanted to find an audience who, once they listened to one episode, would have their teeth sunk in to the point where they would really know that they would kind of have to tune in to future episodes. It would have an inherent driving deep need, not just an affinity like to a baseball team, but a real ROI for their ability to act strategically in their role, you know, feed their employees, grow their company, grow their division, whatever the case may be. And it became evident that sort of speaking to that crowd would really be what we were doing best. And that came from A, the fact that, you know, the broad market space was getting really crowded. B, it just seemed coherent with the moral vision of what I'm trying to do. And then C, Ben, we also started polling our subscribers. So on day 11 in our automated email sequence, when people sign up for our newsletter, on day number 11, everybody gets a survey that's about 14 questions long. It was intended to be as non-leading as possible and ask questions like, you know, by this time we had refined it down to just artificial intelligence, not all these other technologies. You know, what is it that interested you enough to, you know, visit our site? Is this relevant at all to what you do for work? What is it that you do for work? What kind of company do you work for? And or who is the company you work for? What publications do you read? Which of the following 12 topics do you care about? You know, what are you dying to learn about that isn't being offered elsewhere? And after, you know, maybe 12 people filled this thing out, Ben, and this is close to a year ago, it became evident that, man, the people on our site are folks who are kind of responsible for steering companies and making sure that they succeed. You know, maybe we should hone in our podcast to exclusively sort of cater to them. So all those factors kind of came together to kind of make us stick a new.
Yeah. And I imagine as well that there's the added bonus of, you know, if you are building out a community of business execs, business decision makers, there's definitely a lot more potential as far as monetization goes. There's definitely better potential from a business standpoint, since there's various monetization approaches here beyond necessarily straight sponsorships and that kind of thing. So, you know, that kind of fits like a glove as far as how that goes as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, we're definitely thinking about, you know, for me, you know, the bigger moral purpose is, what does it look like to be a company that helps to proliferate a well-informed and well-intended conversation about the intelligences that we're building and how responsible / dangerous / capable we're going to make them, and how we should regulate, roll out, and build such things. Now, right now, the near term of that is, how are we using AI to target people on social media? How are we detecting cancer on MRI scans with machine vision, et cetera, et cetera? So it's much less sort of grandiose, wacky, wild questions. But yeah, that ended up being kind of enough of a narrowing down to develop some serious traction.
Wonderful, wonderful. So since that narrowing down, your guys' audience has really taken off significantly. And I've seen it go a few ways sometimes when people narrow down their audience and get very specific. One, they get so narrow that their audience is a very specific subset of individuals, and so they kind of cap their own growth. And then the other, and this is kind of more your case, is they get very specific about exactly who their audience is, but then because they are so specific and their message, the branding, the titling, everything just speaks to that one type of individual, the audience starts to take off. So can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, what were kind of some of the first indications of change when you started to get much more specific with your audience? What were some of those actions you guys took, and kind of how did that turn into differences on the outside?
Yeah. So a few of the things that we did when we knew we wanted to hone things down. Number one, we made sure to line up guests and line up topics exclusively that were a fit for this new audience that we knew we were going to speak to, which were the people who were communicating with us through our surveys and on LinkedIn. And in terms of a sort of evidence of what was working, we also will, in addition to this, in addition to refining kind of the editorial schedule moving forward and the questions that we were going to cover, we also redid the name of the show as well as the artwork on the front of the show. So we made it very clear that this is about AI and business applications, as opposed to, you know, this very broad topic of the intersection of technology and intelligence, which I think is too abstract and too niched to a very small, you know, transhuman trajectory audience, which is to this day, I mean, you know, you could probably fit them all in a single convention center, like in the world. So, we kind of rebranded the name, redid the graph, and that sort of literally, I think we were like the next month after the rebrand, it was from December to January, was like just under twice the traffic. It was like 83% more traffic than the previous month, which for us was a huge leap. And then, you know, month after that was pretty substantial in terms of growth compared to what we had seen in previous months, where we had even had months where we were down 1% or up, you know, 0.7% or something minuscule like that. We started seeing kind of, you know, 18, 12, 22 kind of being the normal month over month growth instead of sort of the stagnation that we had kind of hit at with a much broader description. So those were kind of the initial changes. You know, crafting the messaging and the content was big, but Ben, as you know, if you put new pages in the book, you probably have to change the cover, you probably have to change the title. We definitely had to do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it has, at the end of the day, it has to be something that if somebody's interested in that topic and they come across it in iTunes, they have to immediately know that that's something that might be interesting to them. And that's one of the things, you know, especially, you know, some of these broader audience type shows that are looking to go broad audience, it's really tough if it's topic specific to even know if that's the topic that you're interested in. And the only reason that people end up checking them out is because their friend says it's great. And so they'll go check it out, which is interesting because as a very specific niche down show, then you can really leverage that aspect of it as well. You know, people are going to tell their friends who it will specifically interest because those are the people that they probably hang out with anyway. So whether it's business colleagues, friends, you know, that kind of thing. Interesting. And so for those folks out there who maybe they've been podcasting for a while or maybe they haven't, but they have an audience, they have a generally wider audience and they're considering whether or not they should be more specific with the audience that they're building, whether they should be more, you know, kind of hone down that audience. How would you advise someone that comes to you to go about making the decision of one, should I niche down? And two, how do I go about it so that I know that I'm niching in the right direction here?
Yeah, those are both great questions. I think, you know, to some degree, and you've, you know, mentioned this a few times here off mic and on mic, initially you're just going to put a stake in the ground and you're going to run. And there really is no learning if you don't do that. And I think that that's extremely important. I think the other extremely important thing for us, and the tough part for me is I was running one or two other businesses at the same time as I was doing this podcast up until 4 months ago or so when I sold my e-commerce company. So I didn't get to knuckle down as much to the podcast as I would have loved. Now I have a lot more time to focus on this company, and it's what I plan on doing forever. The other important thing is not only are you just trying it and being consistent and producing material, but do you have your antennae up for sort of who is really caring and who is not? So I would imagine most businesses that have a broader, you know, community of, or a broader potential audience probably have one or two core value propositions that make them different that if they quote unquote narrowed it down, they might actually widen out the number of really engaged and interested people that sink their teeth into their stuff. I guess I could use an analogy here, Ben, and I have to use an analogy that I know well, which means it has to have been a previous business of mine. But I ran an e-commerce company where we initially were selling martial arts instructional lessons and programs on the internet. And so we started off, you know, selling Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is a martial art that I'm trained in, training programs online. And as it turns out, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu by itself, there's a lot of people writing about that, blogging about that, making videos. We decided to focus specifically on beating bigger opponents because we found that, you know, because I'm a very light guy, I'm not a very large fellow here. I walk around at about a 128. The competition videos of me beating bigger opponents were the most engaging YouTube material we had. And they were also the things that people were asking about in terms of questions. So I would guess, and then we ended up pivoting the whole business around that particular angle of beating larger opponents. And that became one of the value props that multi-million dollar business eventually before it was sold. So my guess is that anybody tuned in now, they probably have a part of what they do that people really love the most, a part of what they do that they're really best at, a part of what they do that's genuinely unique and more interesting than the broad content that they're doing. And that seed is probably sitting there in terms of what your customer interactions and your engagement levels are telling you, which episodes have been downloaded the most, what do you get the most blog content to, where do you get your comments? And I've had to, in both businesses, tease that value prop out of that exact data. You know, where's the engagement? Who cares about what? And my guess has been almost anybody could go through that mental exercise and do the same thing.
Yeah. And I imagine that's a bit more of an art form than a science, seeing as, you know, you start with examining the raw data of what episodes are getting the high downloads. What are the titles for those episodes? What's, you know, what kind of topics do we dive into in those, you know, in that material? What kind of feedback am I getting from the listenership, whether it's solicited or otherwise? But then there's the art of kind of pulling out the gold, as it were. So can you share a little bit, you know, and this may be just one of those things that you got a knack for, or it just struck you at one point, but is there a particular way that you go about you know, going through feedback results, going through download numbers and that kind of stuff to really tease out what that core value prop is that's resonating with people so that you can double down on it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the cheat code that I've used historically is to survey people and get them to verbally articulate what it is they're interested in addition to looking at just where do I get most of my traffic, what blog posts have the longest time on site, you know, whatever the case may be. I think with AI and industry, for example, we did at some point just kind of have to put the stake in the ground and say, okay, we have enough context through surveys, enough context through our online articles to say, this is really our stakeholder audience. By analytics data and by the actual verbal feedback and typed feedback of our people, this is going to be the ball game, put the stake in the ground. So there was kind of a leap there. I think if someone was to take an interim step, Ben, and kind of put a toe in the water, if you will, on this stuff, I think the interim step could be you make your best guess of what you think that core value prop is, and then you produce, let's say, some podcast episodes, let's say some blog posts, let's say some videos about that. You kind of release them, you know, and you run with that as like your theme for a month or so and see, do you see any kind of uptick or not? You know, is there any kind of a, you know, more resonance, more engagement, more resonance with the audience than with whatever your normal content was? And I guess that would be the toe in the water approach. For me, I think with AI and industry, it was enough surveys, LinkedIn conversations, and enough analytics data to say, you know what, these are the people that care, we're doing it. So, you know, I mean, you can, that might be too bold for some folks, but I think there's probably a threshold after which you just say we're going in. But if you want to test the waters, I think running it for a month could be a fun way to give it a try.
Well, and I really like that as a test as well, because if people think that niching down will either harm or largely benefit their business, there is really no way to know until you start testing it out or you just, you know, jump in both feet first. So this is a good way to, if you have, for whatever reason, there may be some ill effects of doing that, this is a good way to do that without losing your shorts. And I really like that. I really like that. So for other podcasters, media creators, you know, content creators out there that are looking to build inbound traffic to their site and that kind of thing, particularly around their business, whether that's through sponsorships, whether that's through selling products and services, how can people learn a little bit more about you and your trajectory? Because you've got a couple businesses under your belt. This is definitely in a completely different arena than a lot of your other businesses, but it's definitely one to learn from. So how can somebody check out your podcast, check out your website? You know, where can people find out more about you and see what you're doing as a model?
For sure. Yeah. And Ben, I definitely wouldn't single myself out as super, you know, smart in this space. I think I've just spent a lot of time pushing my face into the brick wall in terms of cracking the question of how do you attract a B2B audience to be loyal to a podcast? How do you grow a podcast when you didn't start off? I'm sure plenty of your listeners, maybe, you know, they've gotten themselves to new and noteworthy and they kind of did all this exploding in terms of growing and stuff. You know, we started off just terribly slow. How do you grow from there? And then how do you attract a business audience? If nothing else, you know, our stuff might be a decent example if people are interested in that. It, on iTunes or on SoundCloud or whatever platform you're on, it's just AI in industry. So you'll see AI in industry with Dan Fajella. That's the program if people want to tune in. If they want to see how we embed that into the site, how we turn interview content into something that's going to get a lot of search traffic from a B2B audience, just techemergence.com, techemergence.com. So again, I think we might not be the best example for everything, but in terms of what is later stage growth and what does B2B engagement look like on a platform, hopefully people might learn a thing or two from the lessons that we had to learn the hard way.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, and that's all anybody can ever ask for. I don't think there's ever any perfect, you know, models out there. I think there's always trial and error, and there's see what somebody else is doing that's doing reasonably well and see, you know, is that a strategy that makes sense for me, for my audience, for the topic, or in what makes sense as far as the approach that we're trying to take. So it always ends up being a little bit of this grab bag situation of let's try a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Because when it comes to the point where every element of building that type of business is already figured out and somebody's selling the entire how-to, you know, system, it's probably time to move on to a different market because it's about to get overrun. So anywho, Dan, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us today. If you're listening to this, considering doing anything with your audience, whether that's niching down, going more broadly, I would encourage you to go check out techemergence.com, go check out his podcast, AI and Industry, and that will be a good model to take. So Dan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on the show, and we'll probably have a conversation here down the road as well, because it always seems to happen, my friend.
Yes, yes, indeed it does, Ben. Glad to be here, bro. Thanks again.
Thanks for joining us for this podcast episode. And if you've been thinking about launching your very own podcast, I created a 27-step checklist of the exact steps you need to follow to plan, create, and launch a highly effective podcast for your brand. You can find that for free over at thepodcastchecklist.com.